This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our Health and Living segment today, it's our Brainwave series. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist in the studio. We are going to be discussing, would you wait for that reward? What am I actually talking about? Well, in a world where gratification is almost instant, patience is truly becoming a virtue. But could we trick our brain to learn to be more patient is what Dr. Azlina is going to actually help us understand on a brain level, what's going on, what controls our patients. I mean, I personally very invested in this topic, Dr. Azlina, because I'm always told that patience doesn't exist with me. And I do admit, with the onset of gadgets and technology, my patience level has gone down even more. So when do we start learning how to be patient in the first place?
Yeah. Well, it's great to be back in the studio after so many months.
I know,
it's so
right?
Nice to see you.
I'm hoping you're not infecting me with anything.
No, I'm sanitized. Yeah, fully sanitized. It's interesting that you bring that up because I think there's been a very recent trend on social media about the test, right? This kind of game that you play with toddlers. And it's actually an adaptation of a classic psychology experiment. They call it the Stanford Marshmallow Test. Mm-hmm. But now they don't use marshmallows actually on social media now. They use like candy or cupcake or cookies or something. So basically what you do is you set a toddler, usually around about 3 years to five years old, and you put a plate of a plate with a handful of candy or a cookie, and you say, okay, oh, mummy's gonna, you know, I'll leave this here, but mummy's gonna step out for a minute. Okay, can you just wait? Okay, and then they'll step out, and then they'll secretly film the child, right? And what does the child do? So of course you can imagine different children do different things, and it's actually quite amusing to watch their reactions. You know, some wait. Right? Some wait for a minute, but you can kind of see that, you know, they're yearning to reach out and eat it, and they kind of touch it, but then they pull back. Whereas others just, you know, throw caution to the wind and just say, I'm going to eat it right now. And then the mother will come back and, you know, make comments and everything. So actually, in the marshmallow test, actually what the child is initially told is, if you don't eat this, then when I come back, I'll give you more. Right? So I'll give you another cookie. You'll get a second cookie. Mm-hmm. So don't eat the first one. Just wait. And then if you do good, I'll give you a second one. So that isn't done in this social media challenge more recently. But in the classical one, this is what they do. And so that is an indication to see whether or not the child has developed to a stage where they can be patient, or in psychological jargon, it's called delayed gratification, mm-hmm. right? So whether they or not they can understand that if they wait, they will get a bigger reward, right, later. And that's to sort of see whether or not, you know, the child, in terms of the psychological development and brain development, whether the child has reached that kind of milestone to understand and to assess the situation and to make a choice. Yeah.
And what did they find? So did they find that children, we start learning patience when we're young, or is it something we're born with?
Yeah, so I think even children who were 3 years old, you know, you had different three-year-olds acting differently, of course, but, you know, the fact that there were some three-year-olds who could wait, that suggests that they are at a stage at which, at least at 3 years old, they understand patience. You know, what does it mean to be patient, to wait for something so that you can get a better outcome in the future, right? And actually, if you think about patience, so I sort of thought this would be an interesting topic as well because of the social media challenge I mentioned, but also, you know, as an introspective look at how, you know, I could be a little bit more patient. How can we learn to be better, right? Yeah. And, you know, with the whole COVID-19 and water disruption and everything, you know, and so you try to, you know, understand, you know, can I activate different brain regions that can make me, you know, be more patient. So actually, if you think about patience, it's not a simple thing to do, because you actually, in terms of what the brain needs to do, it actually requires many different functions, right? You need to be able to do many different things. So number one is the brain needs to assess the situation, right? You have a cookie in front of you, and you have to understand, right, what it is that your mother wants you to do. So you have to understand, okay, the cookie is for me to eat, and if I wait, I will get rewards. So they need to they need to assess, right? And then also they need to know. So some studies have talked about it in terms of imagining the future. So they must be able to imagine that in the future they will get a reward, right? They need to be able, their brain needs to be able to see forward, if you know what I mean, okay? And then you also need to have some form of good memory. So you need to remember what you need to do, okay? I have to be patient. My mother's going to come back soon, right? Because if you don't remember what the task is, you know, what that your mother is going to be back shortly, then, you know, that will make you change how you behave, right? You will reach out and take the cookie. Well, my mother's gone. I don't know if she's going to come back. This is all she's left me for lunch, mm-hmm. right? And so then you kind of think, well, I better eat it now before, you know, my younger brother comes and snatches it or something. So you're assessing the situation. You're imagining that, you know, what your mother told you, that maybe if you wait, you're going to get another cookie. So you're imagining this other cookie, and then you're trying to calm yourself, right? So you have to tell yourself, okay, you know, I'm not gonna rage, I'm not gonna, you know, get angry, I'm not gonna shout, you know, I'm going to wait, right? So it's actually really quite complex, you know, and there are many different brain regions that are involved. And so then that maybe we can talk about that a little bit later, where some people who are, so to speak, impatient, maybe yeah. because of some kind of brain disease, that's because of, you know, certain parts of the brains aren't working properly.
Oh boy, Dr. Azlina, I don't think I have a brain disease. I hope I have no brain disease. But, you know, what makes one person more patient than the other?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it the brain? Is it? So I think what I want to know is it biological?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it external factors that affect how patient we are? And then the other thing is also, a lot of people you hear say, oh, I've become much more patient that I'm older, right? What's happening there? So what is it? Let's do the first one. Is it a brain? Is it a physiological thing in how your brain is made up? Or has it got to do with external stimuli?
Both, definitely both. I think because there's not going to be a single factor that kind of says, well, that person is genetically born to be impatient, right? Because actually patience is kind of a learned behavior, right? Even before 3 years old, if the child is sort of reaching out for something, you know, and if it's not the right time, then the parents will normally say something like, wait, you know, hold on, right? So the child kind of learns that, you know, that this is how people behave, right? And so then they develop strategies, like behavioral strategies. And that sounds such a jargon to say, but, you know, they learn that, you know, they can't shout, because then, you know, they can't make a fuss, let's say, because then eventually they don't get what they want. So they, you know, I mean, you know, there's, you know, the things that the children need to learn as they grow, right? But again, you know, if you go back to this marshmallow study, and the more recent social media, you will see, of course, a wide variety of responses, right? And why is that? Okay, it's very difficult to say because we don't know for those children the circumstances that they were brought up in before that. Okay, so actually, this initial marshmallow study was done in the 70s, right, by a group in Stanford. And they looked at 90 children. And then they then went and then they recorded the choices that the children made. Either they waited or didn't wait. And how long did they wait for? And then they went back. They went back to those children, you know, decades later, to see, well, how are they doing in life? And, you know, did the choices that you made at that single test, you know, when you were 3 or 5 years old, did that predict any outcomes in how successful you would be in life? And so this study, you know, by this group with the 90 children, they said that, yes, there was some correlation that if you were patient, then they said you did better in school and that you, had better jobs and that kind of thing, whereas those who were impatient didn't do so well. But more recently, that has been revisited by another study also in America, and they did it in 900 children, and they did the same study. But then what they did was that they also looked at the social economic background of those children, right? And they said that actually if you adjust for those who are from lower income families and higher income families, can you still see this correlation in how well you did years later? And they found actually there's no correlation between the choice that you made at 3 years old and how you would. Actually, the strongest factor that determined your choice and how well you would do later in life was actually your economic status, let's say, right? And how they explained that was that, you know, people who are from lower income families, if you present them with a cookie, right, they don't know if they're ever going to get a second cookie.
Yeah.
So they're going to go, well, I'm going to take this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's like survival of the fittest.
That's right. That's right. You know, and so then they may have, that's another learned behavior, right? It's not to say that they're impatient. That's just a learned response to a situation. So again, they have assessed the situation that previously, when my mother offered me this, if I didn't take it, somebody else took it. Or that was the only time I ever got it, so I better take it now, right? Whereas people, children who had, who were in a higher social income bracket, who lived in households with a higher social income bracket, they showed this kind of more what they call patient or delayed gratification. They waited. But that's, of course, because, you know, they knew that, oh, my mother can't afford another cookie.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
I will get one anyway.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
That's just fascinating, you know. We'll come back and find out a little bit more. We are discussing patience and how, you know, whether or not it's a biological thing that determines how patient you are, whether it's your external stimuli that contributes towards your patient levels. I want to also come back and find out if generally, and this I'm asking and I am making a conclusion anecdotally, but how women more impatient than men. It would seem like the men seem to have a lot more patience than women. What is it that drives us? Totally insane. And it drives us insane that they're so absolutely patient.
I think it's just a ploy.
We'll come back and find out up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment. It's our Brainwave series. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist in the studio with us. We are discussing patients. What determines how patient you really are? It's fascinating. I think you've said patience is somewhat a learnt behavior. So it's not really biological, or, you know, it's a combination of both external factors as well as biological. It's interesting, the marshmallows test that you spoke about, your brain needs to assess the situation. When it comes to patience, your brain needs to assess the situation first. You need to imagine there's a reward in the future, and then remember what that task is. Mm. And then through that, you build patience, right? So I think you really need to remind yourself every time. And being how, you know, being impatient and to go through these steps already takes patience to figure out, to take a step back and say, hey, you know what? Okay, I need to run this, you know, I need to run through these three crucial questions in order to be more patient. And it's interesting about the delayed gratification. Mm. You know, what will you benefit? You need to have that understanding of. So let's just take the water cuts recently, right? Mm. There's a lot of impatience, of course. And if you go through the whole thing, your brain needs to assess the situation, right?
Yeah.
For me, it was, okay, it was beyond Shabbat's control. It was due to some irresponsible person who actually polluted the river. Fair enough. Okay, so now we're in this situation. So imagine there's a reward in the future. The reward is we're eventually going to get our water back. How do I actually deal with the situation at the moment? I'm making it sound so simple, right? And then remember what the task is. The task is what? What is it, Dr. Azlina? Help me through this.
Well, the task is that, you have to know that eventually the water will come back, and that you will get there eventually, because you knew from past experience the water did come back, right? And so you are trying to, you reason yourself through. And I think the other thing about patience is that it's this balance between your emotional brain and your logical brain, right? So people who are impatient, sort of, what is impatience? Usually you behave in a, you start raising your voice, or you start kind of accusing people of things, yeah. or you start kind of behaving a little bit aggressively, let's say, right? So that's your emotional part coming through.
Oh, right? That came through on social media, actually.
Yes, yes. Whereas in the logical brain is the one that assesses the situation. So, a lot of the time when you're in these sort of, high pressure or difficult situations, then these two parts of the brain are constantly kind of trying to fight with each other. So how do we kind of try to get a situation where we get the logical brain to win, right? Yeah.
To me, it was just conserve, conserve, conserve.
Yeah, that's right. So although you're really angry that this happened, right? And it's very inconvenient. And, especially for families that had, elderly folk, yeah, or, babies. Or
big
families. Yeah, or big families, exactly. And we were lucky that time it rained. Yeah. I mean, my son was out there scooping up rainwater, and they had great fun, bathing with rainwater for a few days. But, still, we had trouble kind of washing plates, and, you had to eat out and all that kind of stuff. But I think most people, they lashed out and were angry, right? But what we got with, I suppose what Shabbas was trying to do was, every now and again they would send out these messages saying that, well, this is what we're doing. And so by doing that, you calm people and you help people assess the situation. Oh, okay, the treatment plants have restarted. Oh, okay, well, then it's not long now. So, okay. And then you wait a day and you're like, oh, hold on a minute. I thought I'd get wet water by now, but how come I don't? And then you read the notification again and you go, oh, okay, they're doing it in stages. Oh, what stage? Where am I? So you can kind of, so that's what I was saying, but you can imagine an outcome in the future, and that helps you to respond appropriately.
There's a link between the hormone serotonin in the brain and patience. I mean, we know serotonin is a chemical messenger. It influences the neurofunctions, and it's linked hugely to behaviors, from mood and sleep and to cravings and spontaneity. How much does serotonin play a role in patients? And this is going almost biological now, isn't it?
I think these studies looked at serotonin in particular, but actually there are many other neurotransmitters that are also important. So, for example, the different brain regions, like the one that helps you assess a situation and make decisions, that is in the frontal cortex, in our prefrontal cortex, just here near our forehead, behind the forehead. And those, you have a whole different set of neurotransmitters. So serotonin is not the only one. And for example, in the hippocampus is really interesting, because there were some studies using imaging. Right? They imaged the brain, and they found that people, when they were doing this imagining a future reward, okay, when that imagination process, they found that the hippocampus was activated, right? And the hippocampus is typically related to memory, but of course it has many other functions as well, and so. And in the hippocampus, you have different sets of neurotransmitters. You have you've got your glutamate and, a number of others. I won't get into it at the moment. So serotonin I think people mention that because it's kind of one of the easier ones to talk about, because it's also related to mood. And of course, how patient you are is also very important, is also related to how you're feeling that day, right? Yeah. If you're feeling anxious or if you're feeling frazzled, then you are more likely, this emotional brain is more likely to take over,
yeah.
Right? And so that is where then serotonin comes in, right? Because serotonin kind of sets you in this mood for the day. So if you wake up, you know, and you didn't have a good night's sleep, you're already in a kind of cranky mood. And if then there's a traffic jam, or if you go to the hospital and there's a long queue and, you know, the people aren't kind of doing things the way you need them to do it quickly, then, you know, you tend to kind of lose your temper more. Another part of the brain, the amygdala, is also involved in kind of, you know, calming in your emotions, right? And also in another part of the brain as well, is involved in the reward pathway. So even anticipating a reward, that reward pathway will also be activated. Different regions of a particular path of this reward pathway, but, you know, even anticipating a reward, you know, so it's actually... Like I mentioned earlier, you know, we think patience is an easy thing to do, but actually, you know, when you think of all the different components that need to come together to make a person be patient, it actually requires a lot. So how do we improve? You know, how can we get better?
I don't know. Am I imagining, or do you think women are a little bit more impatient compared to men?
Oh, I always get into trouble when I answer these kind of gender questions.
Is there any science or research to show it?
I haven't looked, I have to say. I haven't looked at any kind of gender bias. I mean, I have many anecdotal examples.
Including our own.
Including my own. But I wouldn't want to say.
Okay, all right. Okay, you know.
I think the listeners themselves have personal experiences, so they can come to their own conclusion.
But to be fair, sometimes I want to learn. I want to learn, why is it I am so impatient compared to my partner, for an example, right? Why is it he has so much patience and I don't? Why am I overreacting? Is it a maternal instinct thing? Is it the fact that, you know, it's just us females wanting to nurture and be in control when it comes to the home and getting things going? What is it? Because I want to learn to be a lot more patient.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe women kind of, maybe they see things more holistically, right? So you can, maybe you see, if this doesn't happen now, this is going to have a knock-on effect. Perhaps men tend to approach things by, I'll fix this problem now. And they may not sort of necessarily see the bigger picture, but maybe women kind of, you know, well, if you don't tidy up today, if you don't tidy up here, then that means that I'm going to have to do this. And if I have to tidy up after you, then I'm going to have less time to cook. And if I have less time to cook, then I'm going to have less time to do your homework with you. Mm-hmm. If I have less time, you know, so then you imagine then, oh my God, you know, they're going to go to jail because you, you know, you sort of extrapolate. Whereas perhaps men, they think, well, if you don't tidy up, then it's just messy.
Yeah.
Full stop. Perhaps they think that way. I'm not a man. I don't know. But
I think it has to do with the sense of urgency.
Yes.
Right? Mm. Our sense of urgency is at super high levels. Mm. High levels that even if we overthink, and then it can lead to death as well. It comes to that sort of state.
Yeah.
I think we need to chill.
I think also it not, I mean, not necessarily just concerning women, but anyone who is kind of overwhelmed. I think if you've got a lot of things going on, if you're under pressure and those pressures come with expected outcomes or deadlines, then of course then you will be more impatient. Mm. So, perhaps women are more under pressure if they, for example, look after the home and work. Even if you look after the home, and not work, you know, looking after a home already is a big responsibility. The man works, but he also has, you know, of course, other responsibilities in the house. So anyone who is under a lot of pressure, I think they then tend to have a shorter fuse, let's say. You know, their emotional brain takes over faster than their logical brain.
Okay. Yeah. But Anna, I think they're good. Sometimes it's good to just watch them and take a step back.
Mm.
No one's going to die in the process.
No, it's okay if it's messy for a day.
Yeah. Or if the cat or the dog dies, that's all right.
Has your cat or dog died because of your partner?
In your imagination, right?
In your imagination,
going from
course.
One step to the consequence to this consequence. The cat and the dog are also going
maybe
to die
we,
in process.
Maybe women are just better imagining things.
So let's talk about imagination. I mean, is there a link between imagination and patience? Obviously, I mean, I think we just
I think so. So I think, if you go back to a very simple experiment like the marshmallow test, you imagine that in the future you're going to get a better reward. So then you tell yourself, okay, I'll wait. On the other hand, what makes you impatient is, if you imagine if this doesn't happen now, if you don't do it right now, this is what's going to happen. Mm. And so then that will modify your behavior.
Yeah, great. I mean, and with that also, there was a MRI test that looked into how people can resist temptation, as well as how due to the imagination that's linked to patients. What's that link?
So that's the delayed gratification study where you tempt them with these kind of treats, let's say. And then if you wait, then you get a better outcome. Actually, I wanted to mention a really interesting study that they did looking at people with dementia and Alzheimer's. Yeah, actually, it's World Alzheimer's Month this month.
Yes.
So just wanted to say that there was a study that they did where they an adaptation of this marshmallow study, but instead of asking people to imagine a reward, they gave them a choice of, okay, if you wait, you will either get this cookie or this other gift, okay? And what they found was with people with Alzheimer's disease in particular, if you ask them to be patient for an imagined reward, they have a problem. But if you present them with something and you say, okay, you know, if you can wait, you know, maybe if you have this first, then later perhaps you can have this. Now, you know, perhaps some caregivers may disagree with that because sometimes, if you show someone something else, they will get distracted, right? You want them to have their meal, let's say. You want them to have their rice and their vegetables and their chicken, for example. And you say, if you're patient and you finish this, then then later you may have some dessert, let's say, right? If they see that dessert, they may now want that dessert immediately, right? So, but in this particular experiment, what they found was that people with Alzheimer's they had trouble imagining the future because of course the in Alzheimer's disease you have damage to the hippocampus, and as I mentioned earlier, the hippocampus has been shown to be involved in
memory
and imagination. So you can then see how maybe they would have trouble with that. So I think a lot of the time maybe with caregivers they say just wait, it will be our turn later, right? Or just wait, later we'll go there, or later the food will come, just hold on. Like the other thing with patients is that you also need to keep track of time, right? If somebody says to you 1 minute, you need to kind of have some idea of what 1 minute feels like. And for people who have Alzheimer's disease and dementia, actually that they lose
that
their understanding,
their sense of
time. That's right. So, what is 1 minute to you is, half an hour to them. And so that's also, may be the cause for what you regard as impatience in a person who has Alzheimer's or dementia. But actually, it's not that they are purposely being impatient. It's because they are unable to assess the situation. They're unable to understand that, if they wait, that there's going to be some other better outcome in the future, let's say. And again, they are also unable to remember the task at hand. They're unable to calm themselves if they start feeling anxious. And it's not just, I suppose, for people with Alzheimer's and dementia, but also for other conditions like autism, you know, children with autism. Sometimes you try to ask them to sort of sit down and, you know, be patient and the food is coming, but, you know, they get up. That's also, you know, because they have difficulty assessing and understanding, you know, what do you mean? You know, what is the situation? What do you mean, wait? They have trouble understanding that.
So a good thing is to put something in front of them so that they understand, or to show it to them visually.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be, I think, I mean, it would have to be a lot of training, I think. You know, I think I'm not suggesting that particularly people with who are on the autism spectrum, if they... you know, to distract them with something else when you actually don't want to give it to them yet may not be the best thing to do, right? But to distract them is always a good thing. So it may not be good, and people will have to, of course, see what works for their own families. But for example, if you know that your child, if you put a cupcake or a dessert or a treat in front of that child, before your child completes something that you want them to do first, if you know that the child will not be able to resist the temptation to go for that treat, then maybe that's not the best to do, lah. But what I mean is, the child may have trouble understanding that there is a better reward in the future. That's what I mean. So you have to see what works. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to put the treat on the table while the child is eating, because anybody would have that problem. Even me, I would go, ooh, that chocolate cake looks really good, I'm going to have a nibble. But, you know, it's a bit of a trial and error, but just to understand that the person with dementia or a child with autism, they have trouble assessing the situation and understanding that if they are patient, that something better will happen in the future. Yeah.
What about on the caregiver side? It takes so much patience to be a caregiver.
Yeah. So if you're looking after someone with these conditions, then the onus is on the caregiver to then modify, right? To change the way you behave. And that, of course, that's the very difficult thing, because again, if you are a caregiver, you're normally dealing with a family member, and caring for that family member is already very emotional. So again, your emotional brain comes through, right? And if you're caregiving, then again, you know, you have a lot of other, you know, you also quite overwhelmed by things. So you can see how that can all snowball, right? But I think one thing that may help is that, you know, it's always very useful if you are in a position where you have to be the person who waits, right? So let's say you're going to the hospital, and it's a government hospital, you know, it's going to be a very long queue. Or if you are a caregiver and you are going to be in a situation that might be a little bit challenging, right? It's always good for you to prepare, right? To prepare so that you tell your brain to assess the situation, so that you know that you are going to be challenged, you're going to be put in a situation which is going to test your patience, right? So if you prepare your brain ahead of time, then the logical brain will come through, right? So then you say, oh, okay, I'm going to the, you know, hospital, it's going to be a long queue, it might be an hour, okay, never mind, I'll bring this to keep me occupied, I'll bring this to keep my child occupied, you know, I'll bring some food, I'll make sure I have water, I make sure they've gone to the toilet, I make sure I know where to park. So if you kind of, if you do that,
planning,
if you plan ahead, then you don't put yourself in a situation where something happens unexpectedly, where then, of course, your emotional brain kicks in, right? And so if you plan ahead, and that requires some time, of course, you know, an understanding of what you may be getting yourself into. So even, for example, traffic jams, right? yesterday, really heavy rain, right? Then you think, oh, it's for sure jam. Okay. So you say, okay, it might take me an extra hour to get home, but I'll stop and buy something to eat. I'll, you know, listen to something on the radio, you know, so you prepare yourself. And in that way, then you then calm yourself. You know, it's actually patience is all about assessing, you know, your brain, making decisions so that you can constantly calm yourself, because and you know, keep a level head, right? So those perhaps, you know, some of the things that might be helpful. I know it's helpful for me, you know, if you know that you're going to be, you know, in a situation where, you know, you're going to have to wait. Then, you know, then if you set yourself, you're okay, I'm ready for this. Then you...
it's a lot easier.
Hopefully, you know, it's not as difficult then. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you... So I'm assuming then you cannot trick your brain to be patient.
Well, I think you could, but it's hard because you have to then do on the spot, quick decision making. So you can tell yourself, of course, there are many strategies. If you feel that you're losing temper, you're losing your temper, they always say, you know, step away from the situation, right? And what are you doing there? You are allowing yourself time to think. Right, you're allowing your emotions to subside, okay. So in that way, you kind of overriding, right? Overriding your brain rather than acting, losing your temper. You behave differently, right? Those are some things that you can do.
Would you have a message for us on patience?
Okay. Yes. So my message is really hard, I think, to always be patient. I think, right, Mira? I think
all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. And yeah. It is quite a task. But actually, just going through what you've said today, it's good for us to just understand. It is a learned behavior.
It's a learned behavior, definitely.
And your brain needs to work. There are ways in which you can avoid these situations, but your brain needs to assess these situations in advance.
That's right.
To avoid getting into that trap. Yeah. And if you do, then you need to take a step back.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I mean, easy as it's as I'm saying it, it's the only logical way to deal with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and also, I read somewhere that there was another study that people did where people tend to themselves choose whether or not they have a short fuse or a long fuse, right? So people, they already kind of, how do you say, they perceive themselves as either being someone who's impatient, right? Or compared to other people who are like, I'm a bit more patient. And I think one way that we can kind of switch our thinking of that is that we don't necessarily have to think of patience as a limited quality, right? We don't have a bucket full of balls of patience in that day. You know, actually patience is unlimited, right? And it can be expanded. It's quite stretchable, if you know what I mean. So if you feel that you are a person who has a short fuse, maybe you need to sort of reconsider that. Actually, I can become, I need to think of myself as somebody whose patience can, I can stretch my patience. You know, I can expand my limit. You know, it's not something that I can't control. Mm-hmm. You can control it.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is you are sort of drawing a link between impatience and anger.
I mean, I think...
Are they two different things?
I think when someone... Not necessarily. I mean, you know, if you are impatient, it doesn't necessarily translate into anger. But most of the time, you do feel, you know, some kind of, you know...
Frustration
or anxiety or something like that. It doesn't always come out as being angry. But definitely, there's an emotional component to it. Whatever that emotion may be. Some people are so impatient, they start crying because they're so frustrated.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Hazlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, speaking to us about patients in our Brainwave series on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.